Where are you boys headed?
Canada. We're going over the border to Canada for some french fries and gravy, sir.
Poutine.
Canada, huh? Almost made it.
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You smell something, Rabbit?
Fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Will I try to make you happy? Fix it all up. I was tied around your finger. Yeah, I linger. Will it ever be enough? Why does it feel like the feeling's gone? The hurt is still here all along. Why does it feel like I'm in the wrong? Will it ever be enough?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Good intro right there from one Ariel Posen. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Are you?
I'm doing all right. The song you're hearing is Be Enough, written and performed by Mr. Ariel Posen off his latest album, Downtown. Ariel's going to be performing right here in his hometown of Winnipeg, down at the Park Theatre on November 14th, where you'll hear this song, Be Enough, along with a number of great tracks off his new album. Tickets are $25, available through the Park Theatre website via Eventbrite or directly on the Eventbrite website on its own. Legitimately, great musician, awesome music, better guy. I met him when we were doing Pletcherama a couple years ago. Came in and sat for an hour in the morning with me.
Nice.
Incredible guy. So if you're looking to get out someplace great, get down to the Park Theatre on the 14th. $25 to go see Ariel Posen. All the music is fantastic that he's got. So great setup that way.
And you want to support local talent, right?
Hey, yeah, local talent and a local venue. Park Theatre is a great venue. So there we go. Speaking about Be Enough, I think everybody's just about had enough of Hockey Canada, but the Globe and Mail absolutely dropped bombs this week on Hockey Canada as we fade out Ariel Posen at this point. Ariel Posen. If you missed the article that was released on Tuesday, this legitimately went deep and it got ugly.
Yeah,
that's as nicely as I can put it.
It's only going to get more and more ugly from here, I think, for Hockey Canada, until the organization itself is just dismantled.
But I don't know if you can have a Hockey Canada, like, in its current form, I don't know if you can bring Hockey Canada back after what the Globe found about everything. Yeah. Because there's still another hearing coming up.
Yeah.
Bob Nicholson is going to sit for that one.
He's been subpoenaed.
And this could get very ugly very quickly, because the information in that Globe information now, the Globe and Mail, that they published on Tuesday, legitimately just tears a hole in everything that Hockey Canada has said or done.
Like, they're at the point where they're no longer asking people to come and talk. They're telling them to come here and talk.
So we're going to dig into this Globe and Mail article, and I want to be clear, this is going to take up probably the first half hour. So if you're not interested in Hockey Canada getting destroyed, change the channel for now.
Yeah.
But come back at 6. We'll have something different on, but let's get into this, because the Globe and Mail just teed off. They went out and they basically said, enough's enough, give us the information. But because Hockey Canada has repeatedly stonewalled everybody that wanted information, the Globe went and did something different. They went and obtained nearly 20 years of financial records from the Canada Revenue Agency.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're a public institution, and because they are a government institution, they basically...
And a nonprofit.
Well, no, CRA. I was just talking CRA.
Oh, yeah.
They have to abide by the Access to Information Act, which means that if the Globe comes asking, CRA can turn over whatever information they've requested.
Because Hockey Canada is not a private citizen.
Correct.
They are an organization, and they receive public funds, and on and on and on.
So let's break into this. What we already know is that they had a big fund called the National Equity Fund that had a ton of money in it that would basically pay out if there were sexual assaults, sexual misconduct, anything like that. We already know that they basically took in millions of dollars from Hockey Canada participants, or from minor hockey participants and people across the country, taxpayers, as in terms of grant money and money from the Canadian government, as well as sponsors. So we don't know anything more than that because the website is opaque. The annual reports are missing and or not even found anywhere.
Which is, and in and of itself, problematic.
Yeah, it should be a huge red flag. But the indications that were given at these hearings were also not very clear and or concise with how the information was being conveyed. So the Globe went out and they obtained nearly 20 years of financial information from the organization, basically made them public on Tuesday, said,
yep,
here's what we found. You guys can look at it, too. The dozens of financial statements show an operation flush with cash, despite its tax-free nonprofit status. So this is legitimately, if you want to, the best way I can describe this is think Scrooge McDuck in his money bin. Mm-hmm. This is Hockey Canada at this point.
Okay.
The files requested by Globe included 35 audited financial statements for Hockey Canada and its fundraising arm, the Hockey Canada Foundation. They span from 2004 to 2021 and include financial data going back to 2003. The files represent the entirety of Hockey Canada's records at the CRA. The entirety. Mm-hmm. Only one document was not produced, the 2014 records for the Hockey Canada Foundation, and no reason was provided for that. But if you've already got 35 audited financial statements, you probably have more than enough to start digging into stuff.
You can estimate what the number was in between.
Yeah, you can go A to B pretty easily on that. So let's get into this now, because this is where things get ugly. And Jay, I know we talked about it before the show started. There was a couple of times where you just looked like you had no, how does this happen? What is going on? So, in less than 20 years, Hockey Canada, which governs the sport in the country, as we know, it's risen from basically a modest operation, as we know. They were working hard to bring people together, and I mean, we know the World Juniors weren't a money-making opportunity that they were in the early years. Mm-hmm. They are now a financial powerhouse with vast reserves of liquid assets held in multiple different funds, in some cases exceeding what its own auditors believe are necessary.
Which is a problem.
If your auditors are telling you have too much money just hanging around, you probably need to do something about it.
When you're a nonprofit, that's a problem.
That's a huge problem. Financial experts have also deemed that the amount of money that they have is not appropriate for a nonprofit organization. Here's where things get crazy. The records reveal that in 2021, Hockey Canada reported total assets worth more than $153 million. In 2003, that number was less than $28 million. So if you're doing the math, that's 7 times growth over 20 years. Literally 18 years, 2003 to 2021.
That doesn't happen. That's not...
Hold on. Those assets include $25 million of cash, which is almost double the $12.6 million reported in 2003. On top of that, Hockey Canada listed $118 million worth of investments, which is more than 14 times the amount it held 20 years ago when it presided over $8.4 million worth of investments.
And we know at one point one of those assets included a high-priced downtown Toronto condo. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about investments. We're talking about them purchasing equity and buying physical assets, and
so you might be gritting your teeth, I guess, but you might be sort of going, how is that even possible? So not only did Hockey Canada not only roll in the money a little bit, $153 million worth, but they also started really upping their demands for public money. In 2003, Hockey Canada only took in a few million dollars a year in government grants. In 2021, that number exceeded $9.4 million in government grants.
Yep.
This summer, Minister of Sport Pascal St-Ange froze Ottawa's contributions, as we know, due to the 2018 sexual assault investigation. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, though, $9.4 million of public money for a company that's, and I'm going to call them a company now,
yep,
for a company that has $153 million in assets.
It's a drop in the bucket.
It's not only a drop in the bucket, but you're taking public money when you're sitting on $153 million in assets, including $25 million in cash.
So effectively, Canadians are paying them double because they're paying for the fees.
Correct.
And they're also paying through their tax
dollars.
Well,
we'll get to the fees, and I'm sure parents are going to want to hear this. Revenue from sponsorships and international events in terms of the events that we hosted here in Canada. So revenue from sponsorships and international event hosting grew to more than $37 million last year.
Yep.
That's compared to just $14 million in 2003.
Yep.
That's more than double. It's almost triple the amount over 20 years.
Thankfully, that money's gone.
In years when Canada hosts the World Junior Championship, most notably in 2019, the number jumped considerably, including $57 million in that 2019 year in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
$57 million to host the World Juniors.
Yeah,
that's one third of their total asset.
So
if they were
an ethical company, if they were ethical, they would say, with the sponsorship money we're taking in now, we will pay back the government the money that it gives us on our budget every year.
Hockey Canada's net funding reserve, a figure analysts liken to accumulated profits since it represents the money nonprofit organizations retain in surplus. So this is the money that they basically sit on at the end of the year and go, what do we do with all this money?
Yep.
Hockey Canada's net funding reserve has grown to more than $143 million. It was less than one-sixth that size in 2003, sitting at about $21 million.
So how much was the number there?
$143 million.
Okay. So $9 million.
As Kate Behan, Managing Director of Charity Intelligence Canada, told the Globe and Mail, quote, for a nonprofit, it's really profitable, unquote.
So the contribution of the Canadian government accounts for 6%. Of that.
Which is exactly what they said during the meeting as well, is that it only accounted for probably 8 to 10% at the very most. Mm-hmm. So that's accurate.
It's lower than
it's
that.
It's actually lower, but I mean it's fairly accurate.
Yeah.
So the Globe asked Hockey Canada why it keeps such large financial surpluses on the books. And I have no idea. I can't see a reason for it other than not good reasons, but Jeremy Knight, spokesman for Hockey Canada, came out and said, quote, and again, you can laugh at this all you want because I can't stop laughing at it, quote, Hockey Canada's decision to maintain a surplus is to help safeguard the financial health and stability of the corporation. This is done so it can effectively deliver a comprehensive hockey development system for participants across the country, unquote.
Okay, so where's that investment? Where?
Comprehensive hockey development system.
Because I'm pretty sure there are parents paying for like ridiculous private hockey programs in the order of like $30,000 to $40,000 a year.
So Globe went a little bit deeper. It found, obviously, in July it reported about the National Equity Fund. It also revealed in October that they had the Participants Legacy Trust Fund, which was, again, another huge fund of money that they were like, where did this come from?
And they hid it from everybody.
Well, here's the thing. Both funds were used to shuffle money around Hockey Canada's books in opaque ways. The Globe's investigation found that in 1999, the organization transferred $7.1 million worth of player registration fees into the trust fund, essentially moving that money off its balance sheet. Mm-hmm. They essentially turned profit into liability by hiding it in this fund that they thought they were going to be emptying because of sexual assault claims, mm-hmm. which thereby removed it from their profits.
Yes.
After the initial findings of the governance review, Mr. Cromwell, who was doing, as we know, the Supreme Court Justice.
Also, a reminder, they didn't pay that money out.
No, but this is what I mean. So, revealed that Hockey Canada had transferred about $10 million from the National Equity Fund in 2016 into another reserve known as the Insurance Rate Stabilization Fund. So, Cromwell found out in 2016 that they had also been doing this with another fund. And it was the first of several transfers worth millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
This is legitimately fraudulent activity now. This accounting is almost criminal.
This is why they don't publish their annual financial statements, because money just disappeared. Like, this isn't like, I work for a nonprofit. At the end of the year, our profits are dispensed back to the provinces that we support, that sit on our board, based on their shares in our organization. The money just doesn't disappear.
Well, if you're Hockey Canada did. Because Hockey Canada did this, as Cromwell's report suggested, in an effort to move money to a less conspicuous place on the books. Away from prying eyes for the public, sponsors, and potential litigants. In his report, Cromwell also said the funds lacked proper transparency and oversight. He noted that Hockey Canada had no formal policies in place governing how they operated.
Which is a huge, huge problem.
Okay, so we've got huge issues in terms of money moving around.
They can spend that money on anything.
They got huge problems of moving that money around and nobody keeping an eye on it. So here's where things start to fall apart, because they went and talked to Toronto lawyer Mark Bloomberg. And we're going to mention Bloomberg a couple times. Mm-hmm. So Toronto lawyer Mark Bloomberg, who has argued for transparency in the nonprofit sector, including among national sports organizations. He questioned how Hockey Canada, with $153 million in assets, is not required to proactively disclose those holdings to the public when he often encounters lengthy delays to obtain such records, and that the financials held by CRA are sometimes incomplete with missing pages and redactions.
Which is not a good thing.
If you're redacting your financial statement, you got problems.
If you're a nonprofit, when you are a hockey organization, redacting and because like this.
But as he said, though, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about nuclear secrets?
Exactly.
Like, this is money that you've been given and you've taken from the public.
Redaction happens when it is not in the public interest.
Right?
When it is potentially harmful to the public interest. So what they're admitting is that what they're doing is harmful to the public.
Hold on. So you asked, what were they spending their money on? Are you ready?
Yes.
Hockey Canada began purchasing insurance for sexual misconduct liability in the 1990s. The organization and its insurer drew up a list of 22 known offenders in the hockey world for whom future abuse claims would not be covered. So basically, the insurance company said, if any of these dudes are involved with any claim,
yep,
you're on your own, because we know that they're going to commit the crime. Like,
yeah.
Basically, the insurance companies calling their bluff and saying,
exactly,
these dudes are already
yeah,
that, in trouble.
But that's what the insurance company should do. They're like,
right,
oh, they are protecting themselves against liability, and they're saying, those 22 people, we know something's coming, so we're not going to cover you
right
for that.
The list, which was obtained by the Globe, includes names like disgraced junior coach Graham James and Gordon Stuckless, Maple Leaf Gardens employee who, in minor hockey, coach was convicted of multiple counts of sexual abuse. He died in 2020. But basically, the 22 names that were on there included two of the more famous cases here in Canada, Graham James and Gordon Stuckless. However, if any of the lawsuits, again, connected to those 22, Hockey Canada was responsible for covering those claims themselves, since the abuse occurred before the insurance policy was purchased. So basically, the insurance company is covering its own butt and saying, you're on the hook for these. To account for such claims, Hockey Canada built financial reserves in the National Equity Fund, which is essentially what we were told that the purpose of that was for. Again, at that time, that's what it was for.
Yeah.
It was a risk management move that was meant to cover their butt in case anything came up that weren't supposed to involve these 22 people.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now that just stating that out loud, we already know there's a problem with that.
Yeah.
Because Hockey Canada told the government this summer that it had paid out $8.9 million since 1989 to settle 21 cases of alleged sexual assault. That does not include this year's settlement. There were 21 cases that they paid out from this setup that had 22 known offenders, and nobody knows anything about it.
So you're allowing them to hang around.
The National Equity Fund was used in 9 settlements worth $7.6 million, and most of those cases were linked to known offenders. You basically, the insurance company said, we know they're going to commit the crime, so we're not covering them. And Hockey Canada said, don't worry, we got it.
Yeah.
What are
That's
you doing?
The thing. But the crazy thing is, they're on this list. They know that they're predators, and then they just allow them to be involved.
But again, this is willful ignorance of somebody who's going to commit that crime.
Exactly.
You know that they're going to do that. They're already on this list.
So you're just spiriting away money and hiding it.
Crossing your fingers and hoping that maybe this guy will be good this year.
Again, this is Hockey Canada. This is hockey protecting its own.
Maybe Graham James won't be a bad guy this year. Maybe he won't.
No, but Graham is—he's my buddy. He's a great guy. You know, we gotta take care of him. He's a little bit off.
The Globe's not done digging though. This grave's getting deeper. Globe obtained several copies of Hockey Canada's past insurance policy for sexual misconduct liability, along with the meeting minutes of its risk management committee. What the documents show is that Hockey Canada carried extensive insurance for sexual assault, with coverage up to $20 million and a deductible of $50,000 by the early 2010s. In other words, they knew this was going on, and they kept buying insurance to protect themselves from it.
Yeah.
Not only that, but it continued to pour money into the reserves where they were paying out money for this problem.
Yeah.
So they were legitimately double dipping on the idea that sexual assault was going on and we're going to cover for it.
Yeah.
How are you not tied up as a criminal at this point? How are you not thrown in jail for doing this kind of stuff? You're basically saying we are funding criminal organizations now.
My whole thing is that you keep buying this insurance because you know this problem is going to happen. It would be more cost effective.
Not going to happen. It was happening during that time.
But like, it's more cost effective to fix the problem.
Well, no, we're good.
Stop stealing money from these families.
At a February 2017 meeting of the Risk Management Committee, former Hockey Canada Chief Financial Officer Paul Delparte briefed executives on these financial holdings. Okay, so they've legitimately got a meeting where they're talking about what's going on with all this money. Quote, strategic reserves were created over a number of years to cover potential future claims which are not covered under insurance policy, Mr. Delparte said, which is exactly true. That's exactly what they were doing. These relate to primarily to past sexual abuse cases when potential perpetrators had been identified. So we have a risk management idea set up. We were just talking about how that's important, how you need to cover yourself because the insurance company wouldn't cover you.
Okay. Every company has liabilities. You have things you have to prepare for.
He wanted to say the reserves were also created to safeguard the organization against other future claims outside of known offenders. What? But you just bought insurance to cover that.
So you're just piling on money at this point. You're just taking money.
Quote, there is some belief that our current insurance policies may substantially cover these claims, he said. So you were buying insurance but putting money into a reserve from people that were paying their fees to have their kids in hockey, and you legitimately were double dipping again.
This makes me think of the quote from the hearings. We don't know who's going to keep the lights on or what's going to keep the lights on if Hockey Canada goes away. Well, you weren't anyways, because you're taking literally all the money and putting it into secret bank accounts and paying for insurance.
Mr. Delparte pointed out the Hockey Canada's auditors, quote, could not agree on the accumulation of reserves, quote, because it was difficult to identify what future claims might arise, if at all, and how much they would cost. So you don't know if there's going to be future claims, but we don't know how much we should put in there just in case, because who knows how many times we'll be sued. That is the most ridiculous thing ever. You should be able to base that on previous year's trending. Not only that, but
like what we do at my work. That's
but
great.
Also look at the 22 people and go, are they still involved with us?
So every single year, I have a role in determining the budget every single year because I handle money for my department. And we base our budgetary expenses based on the potential liabilities we have for prize payouts and different things. And,
right, which makes sense.
Like capital expenses and operating expenses, all of those things. The growth in terms of what we ask for and what we budget for and what we prepare for, there are calculations that go into that. We don't just guesstimate. We take what we've done in the past and what's happened in the past, and we have formulas and testing that goes on to determine what a likely budget should be and what our expenses will likely be every other year. We don't just decide, we might as well just like take all this money and like pile it in and just like keep.
Okay, so here's the problem though, is that because they were double dipping, Hockey Canada was awash in cash. They had tons of money to spend because they were taking registration fees.
Not spending it on anything.
Not spending it because they were covered by their insurance company. So they were flush with cash all over the place. Hockey Canada began moving out millions from the equity fund into the insurance rate stabilization fund to shelter that money during this time. They were hiding the money again.
Yeah. Because they wanted it off their books to not look like they were awash in cash.
So here's, again, if you're a parent, this is where you need to tune in and be focused. Because here's where the money comes from. According to its audited financial statements from 2020, before COVID-19 caused a significant drop in participation, about $10.9 million of player registration fees went towards insurance. Okay? Mm-hmm. Remember that number, $10.9 million. A lot of money.
Yep.
Collected from people across this country.
Around the
hardworking parents.
Same amount of money that the government paid from your tax dollars.
Hardworking parents and kids who want to play hockey. Hockey Canada's insurance costs during this time, though, were much lower. Its premiums, deductibles, claims paid, and administration costs amounted to roughly $7.2 million. If you're doing the math, $3.7 million is now sitting there with no purpose because it didn't go to pay any of the insurance costs, and Hockey Canada has it in their possession. Mm-hmm. You know what that means? Dump it in the reserves.
Because their operating expenses and their capital expenses are already covered by the sponsorship money and the government dispensation.
These seven-figure surpluses happened regularly. From 2016 to 2020, Hockey Canada's insurance margins, the difference between the amount it collected from players and the amount it spent on premiums and deductibles, averaged about 26%. Mm-hmm. Think about that. For every dollar you gave Hockey Canada, 26 cents of it went directly into their pockets.
Yep.
Didn't go towards your insurance, didn't go towards your premiums if you got hurt, didn't go to any of that stuff. It went directly into Hockey Canada's pockets.
So, because so they, if you paid they don't pay for the arenas, they don't pay for the referees. That all comes out of...
If you paid $20 fee every year, remember we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, $20 fee every year, that means you spent... Of the $16 went to paying your insurance, and $4 went to paying Hockey Canada for whatever they wanted to do with it.
Yep.
Think about that. You put $4 in somebody's pocket for them to buy expensive dinners and rings after they won the World Junior Championships and pay for a condo in downtown Toronto.
Because we don't know what those investments are. We don't exactly know what that is. What I'm curious about, what I'm thinking about, what was the incremental increase in executive salaries through that time?
I'd like to see that as well. But Cromwell spoke to Hockey Canada's auditors and noted, quote, in their view, Hockey Canada has overestimated its liabilities. No doubt.
Yeah.
That's the biggest understatement everywhere. Cromwell also said that Hockey Canada gave little justification of the size of, reserves, saying, quote, when asked how they had estimated those liabilities, Hockey Canada informed us they relied on past claims, but beyond that, it's not clear how these liabilities were estimated. Yeah, you don't say. We're just making up numbers now. In recent years, the reserves have outpaced what the organization pays in claims, Ms. Behan said. We spoke about her before.
Because they crunched the numbers on that.
Hockey Canada spent $407,636 to settle uninsured claims and cover deductibles between 2016 and 2021. So in 5 years, they spent $407,000.
Yep. By the way, they're making $3.7 million off of you every single year.
That's only in 1 year, but they only spent $407,000. Now, again, do the math. In 5 years, if they made 3.7, that's $15 million right there.
Yeah, you don't.
It's technically 18, but I'm just rounding down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So things didn't go well there. Mr. Cromwell found the lack of transparency of the National Equity Fund and other funds unacceptable. He noted that reserves for the uninsured liabilities can be a sound risk management for policy for organizations, which we said, but the National Equity Fund was used in ways that weren't fully disclosed. It also lacked sufficient oversight, and this is not how reserve funds were supposed to operate. Mm-hmm. He also found that parents and players, as we said before, who paid into the reserves with their registration fees were not told how money was being used, and that the disclosure and transparency that happened didn't end there. So we already know that this is going on.
Yeah.
Here's where things get immeasurably worse. Okay. I'm going to jump into this, and because this part really bothers me. Again, Hockey Canada told Ottawa that the National Equity Fund was meant for health and wellness programs, as the fund helped pay for counseling and treatment for players, among other things. Cromwell couldn't find any evidence of these supposed expenditures in the financials.
They straight up lied.
So they told the government that they were willing to pay for health and wellness, but didn't pay dime number one for health and wellness.
Like, if that money actually went to supporting players through therapy, mental health services, physical therapy, all of those things, the services that players that are registered in Hockey Canada and insured by Hockey Canada would have amazing treatment. Like, world class. But they don't, because Hockey Canada didn't tell anybody that this was an option, didn't tell them that the money was there, didn't tell them they were covered, that any of this could happen. What did you use the money for?
Well, again, they didn't. It's sitting in a reserve. Again, Cromwell went digging to find out who was in charge of this reserve. Quote, we were initially told the CFO was involved in NEF management. That's the National Equity Fund management. Mm-hmm. Next, Hockey Canada informed us that the director of sports safety played an important role in managing the fund. When asked about the subject, the director of sports safety denied having such a role.
Yeah.
Okay, so who's in charge? After obtaining these reports, certain Hockey Canada executives again informed us that the director of sports safety managed the fund, but with the assistance of legal counsel. Most recently, the CFO provided us with a chart according to which all matters involving insurance reserves, renewals, and claims, as well as settlement expenses, were handled by legal counsel. So basically, if you had to meet with Hockey Canada's lawyers, they had a checkbook ready for you.
Yeah. Also, so they put the director on there, but as a basically a paper transaction to say, oh, this person's involved with the assistance of legal counsel, didn't tell the person that this was under their purview, so it would be handled by the lawyers.
Francis Brouard, who the Globe spoke...
somebody in the organization had to handle it.
Francis Brouard, an accounting professor at the Sprott School of Business in Ottawa, who the Globe spoke to, analyzed a few of Hockey Canada's recent audited financial statements. He was struck by the lack of disclosure around its reserve funds, particularly in the footnotes. Quote, when we look at the funds, the notes to financial statements basically say nothing.
Yeah. When we withhold revenue that's supposed to go to the provinces, we provide justification. It's like the board, which is the provinces, approved us to withhold this money to put in towards a capital expense for something that it happens in the interim before the budget's approved, or to add on to the budget expenses from this year. But it's all documented.
And so people are going to go, well, wait a minute. Like, Hockey Canada gets money from the government. Like, they're obviously part of that national sport thing. Why didn't they do anything? Well, again, they went back and they spoke to Sport Canada spokesman Daniel Savoie, and he said, quote, NSOs are independent organizations. The audited financials belong to the NSOs. NSO meaning National Sport Organizations. Mm-hmm. So if Sport Canada can't get involved, how do you think anybody else is going to get involved?
They don't.
So CRA is the one place that legitimately the Globe could have gone to, and they did, and they got all the information out of it. Again, Hockey Canada argues that the records that in terms of the lawsuit they have with the government of Canada right now, argues that the records contain, quote, financial, commercial, scientific, and technical information that is confidential. Disclosing those documents would cause it serious financial hardship. Here's an idea. You're sitting on $153 million in assets, you idiots.
Yeah.
There's no financial hardship there.
They did the bare minimum. They did what they were legally required to do from a reporting perspective, and that's tell the CRA.
So Mr. Bloomberg agrees with you. Why not put the onus back on these organizations? Simplest way to do it. If you want our money, you have to post financials. I don't think any government group should fund any, or I don't think the government should fund any group that hasn't put their financial statements on the website for at least the last 5 years. As he said, quote, this requires zero effort. If they can't, if they have lots of reasons why it's so hard and difficult, maybe they're in the wrong job.
Yeah. When you're not posting financials like that, you have a problem. You're deliberately hiding things.
Like I can't sit here anymore and support Hockey Canada at all.
If they had done that, if they had posted those financials, we would have found out about this years ago, because we would have been able to look and, you know, the numbers wouldn't have lined up.
But again, I can't sit here and honestly say that I want to see Hockey Canada survive now. I would rather see it burn to the ground. I get that there's a pile of money that's sitting in a bank account somewhere assigned to Hockey Canada.
Yeah.
But it needs to be legitimate. You need to bring somebody in who can, A, account for every last penny and make sure it's being used for the right things, and B, have national oversight from every corner of this country to ensure that every corner of this country is receiving equal and an equal opportunity to that money.
But the issue is, we don't know, because they don't have any rules or regulations on those funds to say who...
Which is why I'm saying burn it to the ground now.
Exactly.
Like, start over.
You need to start all over again. You need... Like, this is why rules and regulations are important, is because it determines what can and can't... what the money can and can't be used for, who gets to approve it, who has to sign off on it, who has to see it, how it gets reported, how much can be used, how that fund is replenished, how it is emptied. Like, every single piece needs to be... Like, rules and regulations should be hundreds of pages long.
Okay, so if you want good news, I'm not trying to take this off, but I'll give you good news. Hockey Canada did admit that it's become a full signatory to the Office of Sport Integrity Commissioner. So
you did the bare minimum.
Somebody in the office finally said, "We better do this."
The intern that they have running the company now is
the government-funded agency will accept and investigate abuse allegations moving forward, as per TSN's Rick Westhead. Rhett Westhead also noted that OSIC will also accept historical complaints. So now Hockey Canada is on the bubble when it comes to any complaints going forward.
So anybody who was turned away before, Call them back.
Yeah, get in there, please. So there's a good news. There's a little bit of good news that came out of that. All of this terrible financial pressure that they're facing has at least forced them into starting to follow some of the rules set out by the government to say, if you're going to act like complete losers, we're going to make sure that you're going to lose everything.
Now we know why they didn't bow to the government pressure, because they had hundreds of millions of they could have kept going. Once the sponsors dropped out, they could have just kept going.
But that's the thing, though, is they're not hard up for that. They have $25 million in cash.
Yeah.
Like, they're not hard up for money. They just legitimately don't feel they should spend any of their money.
Yeah.
If it's your money, I'll spend it. If it's player registration fees, I'll happily spend that money. But if it's money sitting in a reserve that I know is going to be going for $3,000 gold rings after we win the next World Junior Championship,
we're not spending
that until
let's get rings. We don't have any accounting on what that money has been spent on historically, aside from the abuse claims and the few that have been documented. But we know that they have been spending ridiculous amounts of money on their board members and their executives. That's why I want the financials from – that's part of reporting on some of these things. You need top-level executives. You need to have reporting on what they make and what the pay breakdowns are. I want to know what the pay breakdowns are for those executives throughout the entire history of Hockey Canada and see.
Well, at this point, we might be able to get more out of Bob Nicholson because he has nothing to lose. So,
like, what drives me crazy is when in the rest of the country, wages have stagnated and are not keeping up with inflation. We're not keeping up with inflation before the crisis that we're going through now. And the fact that they have likely just been taking money and feeding it to these executives through gifts and compensation drives me insane.
Well, that didn't happen according to Hockey Canada.
Oh, sure. Scott Smith. I totally believe you.
All right. We got 24 minutes left, 23 and a half minutes left here, and we got to get to the next story because I know you're going to kill yourself if we don't, because this is an outstanding story. I'm going to let you talk a little bit about Arizona, only because I know you've seen the pictures, but I got a bigger story for you.
Okay.
If you want to talk about the again, give me your thoughts on Mullet Arena right now.
It's a nice arena. For an NCAA team, it is an absolute joke that this organization is playing at ASU. What is even more of a joke is that they didn't have anything ready on time. They were putting the visitor dressing rooms to get the temporary rooms together. The fact that they have to have temporary rooms for, because you look at the Arizona Coyotes dressing room and it looks like Glenwood Arena.
It's a broom closet.
it looks like any community center rink here in Winnipeg. You couldn't have been proactive and gotten this done earlier. They were literally putting up.
They weren't allowed in the arena.
So
the answer is no, they weren't allowed in there. Because, like, again, if the Sun Devils are there, if there's the Sun Devils are in the arena, they cannot be there. This is the part that I struggle with, is because how dumb do you have to be to agree to this and go, this is a good deal for us?
You've been sitting there for so... Like, they were literally putting the dressing room together while the Jets were on the bus over to the rink.
Hold on. Here's the next part of it. So, again, amongst all the happy, shiny, fun stories that we're hearing, and again, there have been players that have come out and said it's...
The Mullet giveaway was stupid, by the way.
Well, they said it's been crazy there. Like, the fans have been pretty nuts there or whatever, which is fine.
It's good for the fans.
The Arizona Arena, though, story is pushing forward. Craig Morgan of Phoenix Sports is reporting that the proposed Tempe Arena that the Coyotes are hoping to build may end up in front of the people of Tempe in a referendum. The city council will vote on November 29th, but the council Mickey reportedly Mouse. Shifting the vote to the people via the referendum in 2023.
Remember when...
Hold on. Here's the quote from Morgan. Quote, while the vote on November 29th will provide clarity on the council's opinion of the Coyotes' proposal on the entitlements and on the general plan amendment, a referendum would be the ultimate vote in determining whether the project begins. That vote will be held in 2023 at a date yet to be determined, unquote.
Hold on. They're having the referendum in 2023. So there's another if the people of Tempe in this referendum want it. and I hope that they're properly informed on it. It's going to take years after that for the arena to be built.
Well, again, Morello has said 23 to 25 months is how long he thinks it'll take him to build. I'll get to that in a second, though, because the remediation alone is going to take probably about 18 months, but whatever. According to two separate polls conducted of Tempe citizens, more than 60% of them approve of having the arena project.
How many?
60%. 60.
That's not close enough, man.
Hold on. So CEO Colin Diaz, he's the Tempe Chamber of Commerce president and CEO. He told Morgan, quote, "As of Tuesday last week, we heard the recommendation and took a formal vote. As a board, we are in support of the Coyotes in this process, as well as the city's due diligence in the process. We know that there's still work to be done and there's community meetings, but as a whole, we're looking at the economic impact and looking at what it will mean for the city as a whole, from a tax perspective, from job creation, to a lot of programming that they're going to be supporting. It checks a lot of boxes for us and makes a lot of sense," unquote. I cannot believe that this dude is in charge of the Chamber of Commerce and doesn't know a damn thing about economics.
Yeah. We have decades of economic research that shows that projects like this do not generate money.
Here, you want? Let me bring this up.
The truth is, stadiums very rarely revitalize their surrounding areas or create large numbers of permanent jobs. Just listen to one bar owner near that new Marlins ballpark.
So this is the Florida Marlins.
Since the stadium opened in 2012, not only have his profits not risen, on game days, his regulars stay away, afraid of the traffic.
Here as a business owner, we don't see any changes. You could even say it's hurting us.
Of course it is, because no one has ever said, hey, let's go hang out in the area around the stadium. And I'll tell you why. I've got a new shirt, and I really want someone to vomit Miller Lite and nachos all over it.
So again, John Oliver has gone through this repeatedly about stadiums. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that I can bring this up again, because I think that he does a great job on this. But it is true that every study, almost every economist and every research and every study, every researcher and every study has basically said that building stadiums is the dumbest way for you to do any sort of revitalization.
Yeah.
Any revitalization. Nor does it return the tax revenue or the job creation that you think it's going to get.
Yeah. Take Winnipeg, for example. Our Canada Life Place.
Our dying downtown?
Yes. Nobody wants to go downtown. My girlfriend's mom went to her first Jets game recently. And she did not feel comfortable parking. She didn't know where to park downtown. She didn't feel comfortable parking downtown. So she was dropped off before game time, picked up right at the end of the game. And that is a common story for thousands of Winnipeggers every
year.
Okay,
so the city of Tempe is doing this idea where they're taking this information from the team, right? Again, I'm going to point to a locale that they should know about fairly well in Glendale, because Glendale did Glendale commissioned an analysis by Phoenix-based consulting firm Applied Economics to determine exactly what the Coyotes generate in city tax revenue.
Yep.
It was posted in the Seattle Times by Jeff Baker. That analysis examined 4 years of spending patterns by patrons at the arena and at the adjacent Westgate Entertainment District complex of shops, bars, and restaurants during Coyotes games versus an average of 17 annual concerts held there.
Yep.
So again, Coyotes games, 41 home dates, 17 concerts held there.
Yep.
Okay? Significant number difference here. We should probably see a significant favoritism for Coyotes games if what they're saying is going to work. Here's where things fall apart. The new complex that Tempe is basically being promised will feature, quote, hotels, about 1,600 apartments, retail stores, restaurants, and a sports book. So basically the same thing they built around Glendale.
And Sarah, the thing they built downtown Winnipeg.
Sarah Murley, a principal at Applied Economics, quote, concluded that spending by concert goers was significantly greater than for Coyotes events. $58 per person compared to $27 per person for Coyotes games. Murley attributed this to concerts being a special event for which attendees linger longer and are more likely to stay overnight at nearby hotels, unquote.
Yeah.
So if you're legitimately going to build this, building the arena is one thing. Building the complex around it is absolute garbage. And you're not going to get the value out of it that you think.
Let me tell you why. Because most NHL arenas are built in downtown areas, which are high traffic areas. So you need to beat the traffic to get there, which you are probably taking a bus or a train. If you're driving there, you have to find parking, so you're going there. You're not going to want to go and mill around for a while. You're going to want to get in there and get out.
So the sit, hold on.
And you're exhausted after the game, so you don't want to stick around and go to a bar because you want to go home and sleep.
So I don't disagree with any of that, but you just brought up a huge thing about parking and all that stuff, right? So again, the city has already said that they're going to basically issue municipal bonds to pay for all of the infrastructure in and around this complex.
Yeah.
That includes the cost of land remediation, electric lines, water lines, sewer lines, roads, and a parking garage at the northeast corner of the property.
Mm-hmm.
Municipal bonds are a loan that the city takes out. You know who buys municipal bonds often? Billionaires, because they don't need the money.
Yeah.
So if you take out a 10-year municipal bond and a billionaire buys that money, that billionaire gets not only his money back, but the interest at the end as well the city has to pay out. If you don't make any money off this project, you're in deep trouble as a city. Secondly, you know who would capitalize huge off of buying these municipal bonds?
The Morello family?
Alex Morello and the Arizona Coyotes.
Weird. It's almost like it's a rigged system.
So again, I don't understand how this idiot Diaz thinks that he's going to make any sort of headway in making Tempe a place you want to be at. Again, there's a lot of other crap in here that he basically talked about.
I wonder who finances his campaigns.
I don't know. But there's a lot of other crap in here that he talked about. 2.5 million people, or you know, we're going to attract 3 million people to come down there, and there's already 2.5 million people coming down to Tempe Town Lake. It's the second largest attraction in the state behind the Grand Canyon. All of this stuff is garbage because those fans don't overlap. You don't. Tourists are not hockey fans. You might get the occasional one, but the overlap means that you're not going to get 3 million people realized then.
Yeah, because people aren't going there to do both, right?
I'm done with Arizona. Like, Arizona legitimately should just be folded at this point. They play in an awful arena with no fans, and they're basically being railroaded into building this new arena.
Because they were not smart enough to get it right the first three times. But, like, the thing is, you mentioned it, it's going to take 18 months to do the remediation because you are building on a desert next to a lake.
They figure they have to move out 150 million tons of garbage.
Yeah.
150 million tons. Where do you put that?
In the desert.
That's the next question.
Because the environment, who cares?
So that insanity is going on right now. And again, that vote comes out on November 29th, where, again, it sounds like the council will shift it to the people, and the people will have to vote in a referendum whether or not this is going to work.
If you're the
if you're the Coyotes and you lose, let's say, 70% of your games over the next 3 years, do you think people are going to come out to vote for a new arena?
That's the thing. That's why they want to have the referendum quickly, but...
Why? Because they're 1-2 at Mullet?
Yeah. But here's the thing. If you're the Coyotes and you are mortgaging your long-term future on a margin of 60% people supporting, that's a bad bet.
Again,
it's essentially a coin flip if you will get this rank or not.
Marullo owns casinos, so he's a gambler already. But again, it's not him gambling. It's legitimately the city council saying, you know what? Let the people decide.
Here's free money.
Let the people decide, because if we screw this up, our political careers are over. Let the people decide. They're taking the easy way out.
And the Marillos just win because they're going to buy the bonds and they're going to make money plus the interest.
As long as the project goes through, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. But this is where...
But like, if it does go through, you better believe the city is going to make it work.
But they can't, though. According to every research study says it will not work. Like, you can't make this work. I don't understand this. I don't know. Whatever. It's beyond me. Ottawa Senators are up for sale. Are you surprised?
Not really. I think...
I mean, this was kind of expected after Melnick died.
Yeah.
So.
So, and it was potential that they were going to get sold before that anyways.
I'm a little disappointed in People Magazine, not only People Magazine, but Sportsnet and now Bruce Garriock as well, because they're reporting that Ryan Reynolds is interested in buying the team.
Has he said that he's interested in buying the team?
No, he has not.
What?
So again,
I thought he put out a video on his Instagram again.
No. So again, I want to be very clear here. Unnamed sources have said, I'm interested in buying the Senators.
Yeah.
Unnamed sources have said that again, and I'll just throw this out there, Daniel Alfredson is interested in buying the Senators. I don't care who you are, and I know this is a journalism thing that you can use an unnamed source if you're tracking down like a big, juicy, salacious story. But unnamed sources, when you're talking about Ryan Reynolds buying a hockey club that's going to cost over $500 million to buy, is a little dumb. Even if he's part of an ownership group, don't announce it until he's actually part of a group.
They want him to, like, they want to push him a little bit. Here's my offer.
But why?
Here's my offer. Ottawa Senators, I will give you $5 and a $20 Tim Hortons gift card for the Ottawa Senators. Call me. I'm available. Don't worry.
I'm not certain that's going to work, but I see where you're coming from.
But here's the thing. Like, Ryan Reynolds, for all of the complaints people have about him, he understands how to make money. And buying the Ottawa Senators for $500 million isn't going to make him money. He bought Wrexham essentially as a joke.
So he didn't buy Wrexham as a joke. I mean, Rob McElhinney talked him into it, and he bought it with the idea that it's going to cost us nothing, and if we fail, I'm only out $1 million or whatever.
Yeah,
like I'm not risking everything on this.
But $1 million and $500 million are pretty far apart. Like he makes $1 million in his sleep.
Again, Garriock reported today in the Ottawa Sun. Quote, sources told this newspaper Thursday morning that Vancouver-born Hollywood star has a real and genuine interest in purchasing the Senators from the family of late owner Eugene Melnyk. Again, who are these sources?
So this man owns...
Who is protecting Ryan Reynolds by going, don't name me in the story?
So this man owns a soccer team. He owns a gin company. He owns a telecom company. He makes millions of dollars every year making movies. He basically just owns the character of Deadpool at this point. He doesn't need this.
I don't. Unless he becomes part of a group that is putting their name forward as a potential buyer, this is a non-story. This shouldn't even have been reported. This is ridiculous that we allow this to go on, because this speculation now is just going to fuel up all sorts of fans going, oh, and I've seen it already on social media. People have replaced the Ottawa Senators face with the Deadpool face.
Yeah.
And I go, stop. Because if he goes, you know what? I was never really interested. He's already said in multiple interviews he's not a hockey fan.
Yeah.
So why are we even trying to pursue this? This is the dumbest thing I've seen in my life. Whatever.
If it was the Vancouver Canucks, I might see a little bit of it. He's more likely to buy the Vancouver Whitecaps than he is the Vancouver Canucks, though.
He has never once, and again, he's gone to a few games, and I get that. And he's friends with Austin Matthews, because Matthews works for the Sick Kids Foundation and stuff. Yeah. Like, there are tie-ins. I get that. But to have him linked to the Senators' sale when there has been nobody that has said Ryan Reynolds is part of our team. Ryan Reynolds is part of our buyers group.
Buying a sports franchise, a major sports franchise, is not a market. Like,
this won't sell for less than $750 million. I'll tell you that right now. And Ryan Reynolds' net worth, if you're going to just tabulate every penny he has in his couch, is probably worth about $150 million.
Yeah. He doesn't have. He doesn't have Hockey Canada amounts of money sitting around.
So I mean, this is what I mean. This is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Until he joins an actual buying group, do not report this.
Until he actually comes out and says, "I'm interested in buying the Ottawa Senators," why are we talking about this?
Well, because again, somebody wants to huge clickbait here. So whatever.
It's going to be some like hedge fund billionaire that buys the team. She's going to be... There's a bunch actually, of, it's Canada, so it's going to be a property developer.
There's a bunch of guys that have already expressed interest. One of the minority holders of the Montreal Canadiens. A couple of guys that got bought out by the Red Sox guys from the Penguins have said that they might be interested. Guys that actually have, I don't know, experience owning a hockey team have said, hey, maybe I want to own my own hockey
team.
And
it's much more likely that they're going to buy this team.
Right. And if you're the NHL... they're probably going to say, okay, these are the guys we want in
like,
this race.
I fully expect.
I don't care if he wants to be a minority owner like Jerry Bruckheimer is.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that if he wants to be a minority owner. But until he is part of that group, I'm just as interested as Ryan Reynolds is in buying the Senators.
Like with that market, I'm expecting probably one of Bell or Rogers to move in and grab a chunk of that too.
Well, Bell won't because... they can't because they both still own. They still own. Don't they still own portions of the Leafs? They can't be multiple owners. Yeah, they can't be multiple owners of a team.
Can't they?
No, you cannot.
I feel like they'll bend the rules.
No.
MLS is to sting.
You want some quick hits before we get out of here? We got 5 minutes.
Sure.
Lada Togliatta announced on Tuesday the club has submitted an official application to rejoin the KHL for next season. KHL Board of Directors will consider the application for next year. They were last part of the KHL in 2018, but were expelled from the membership due to a lack of a satisfactory arena in 2010. They rejoined in 2014 after the Lada Arena was built, and then they were tossed out in 2018 again. This will be the third time they try to get in. The team currently sits sixth overall in the VHL, the KHL's version of the AHL. So they're not very good, and we're trying to get back into the K.
Guys, it's not going to work.
SDHL's Gothenburg HC has withdrawn from the league and will not complete the season amidst fears of bankruptcy, as per Jan Melgren. So again, for the Women's Hockey League over in Sweden, this is big.
Uh-huh.
Acting chairman of Jan Melgren, acting chairman of Gothenburg HC, quote, a bankruptcy would mean all activities, including children, youth, and para hockey within the association would cease, something we want to avoid. So it sounds like they made the tough choice to end the professional team to keep all the other levels of hockey around, which is kind of, I mean,
how Swedish of a decision of them.
Thinking
about the children.
People are going to go, oh, it's so socialist. Well, you know what? It saves a ton of kids from having to go find other places to play. So, Stockholm Club's AIK and Djurgården. They have 151 major league seasons and 23 national titles between them together in the Swedish Elite League, and both are currently playing in Sweden's second-tier league after being relegated. It's the first time since Swedish hockey started in 1922 that Stockholm doesn't have a team in the top league.
That's hilarious.
100 years of Swedish hockey, Stockholm finally has no team playing in the top tier.
That's wild. I also learned recently that there's a team from the London Emperors have been repeatedly trying to get into the KHL, and I find that hilarious.
That's interesting as well. That's crazy. Congratulations go to Reggie Leach, on receiving the Order of Canada from the Governor General of Canada.
Reggie Leach should
be in the Hall of Fame, but he's not yet, so get on that hockey. If you're interested, if you want to meet a legend here in Winnipeg, Brian Trottier is going to be at the Grant Park McNally Robinson location next Wednesday on November 7th, signing copies of his new book, All Roads Home, A Life on and Off the Ice. If you want to meet the legend, get down there, buy a book, and meet Brian Trottier. That'll be interesting.
McNally really does do a great job.
I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe on the 24th of November, Kurt Kielback will be there as well, signing his new book. So,
awesome.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, McNally does an amazing job of getting people to come in and do signings.
Yeah, they do a great job. He's on a tour going all the way across the country, through, I can't remember who is, Penguin Random House, I think is the publisher for that or whatever. So they're getting them to go across country, but that's awesome. A few notes from Canada West, from ex-Canada West alumni, or at least Canada West alumni. Ryland Toth was waived by Fort Wayne.
Boo.
He didn't even make it out of the preseason. They basically waived him after one game in the preseason after he came off the bench cold and got scored on four times. Which sucks.
Stupid.
Both Cam Regan and Ethan Price, formerly of the McEwen Griffins, were waived by the Worcester Railers after their second preseason game. And Zane Franklin has been traded to Idaho from Reading after leading the Reading Royals in scoring for the first four games of the season.
Nice.
Idaho immediately put him on their reserve list.
Not nice.
Not nice. Bailey Barassa picked up her second point, another assist with Moto, after collecting the primary assist on Wilma Sundin's second period goal to make it 1-0 en route to a 4-0 win the other day over Lexans. Anna Pershke was stopped in the first period in a breakaway in this one. This is a former Cougars forward, is sitting with a goal and two assists on the season for Lexens. I went back and took a look. Her first professional goal was scored October 23rd against Linköping. She made it a 3-2 game in an eventual 5-4 overtime loss.
Awesome.
Linköping currently dead last in the SDHL. Unfortunately.
Rough.
Congrats to both players, though, as Moto is sitting in third place right now, 2 points behind Brennus. So good for them in terms of getting on there. So there's your updates in terms of what's going on for a lot of the players that were playing here in Canada West that are playing elsewhere or not playing elsewhere now that Rylan Toth, Cam Regan, and Ethan Price are not playing elsewhere.
They'll find somewhere to go.
I hope they do, because, I mean, Toth, if you need a goaltender, Toth is a guy you should be looking at immediately. Yeah.
Like, giving up 4 goals when coming in cold, like, that's...
Yeah, that's brutal that they did that to him.
Yeah.
And they only had, the weird part is they only had 2 preseason games, and they only gave him like one period of action.
Yeah.
Like, how do you even judge a guy on that?
Like, yeah, exactly. It's preseason.
Well, I don't know what's going on in Fort Wayne, but it's not as great as it once was. But Jay, we got to get out of here. We got about 30 seconds left. Anything you want to say before we get out of here? Obviously, what's coming up on Let's Talk About?
Next week, going to be talking about the very unconstitutional use of the notwithstanding clause by the Ontario government, which is violating the charter rights of
teachers, workers
in Ontario.
That. Yeah, that'll be a good one. I want to hear about that.
Yes.
Anything else you want to say before we get going?
Just have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, have a great weekend. Hope you're recovering from your candy explosion that happened on Monday there. So with that, folks, we're going to get out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It's been the Hockey Show. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.